Well, hello, everyone. This is Debbie Guy Geish of the Pettawoods Group, and welcome to our second season of Blog Talk Radio. This year, we've taken a spin, and we've decided to name our radio station. So you can now call us WRMR, or Revenue Marketing Radio. And we got the idea basically from you. We had so many listeners last year who found so much value in these peer-to-peer discussions. We decided to bring the radio show back, and this year we're going to keep it going. So every Thursday at 2 o'clock, join us at WRMR, and every week we're just going to talk to a revenue marketer. It's not going to be somebody telling you how you should do things. It's going to be your peers talking to you about how they did it. And again, our focus is on revenue marketing because that's what we do at the Pettawoods Group. We help organizations transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. Now, this season, we're also going to plan a whole lot more interaction. So all of my guests coming on the show are expecting a ton of questions from everyone. And so during the session, if anyone has a question, all you have to do is press number one on your phone, and you'll raise your hand. And we have screeners on the switchboard, or either I'll take your call directly, and we would love to interact with you and find out what you're thinking or maybe how you have solved a particular problem. So I am thrilled today to have as our first guest Ed Thompson of BrainShark. Ed is not only a fantastic revenue marketer, he's also a good friend of mine, and I will tell you there are few people in the industry who have been as successful at revenue marketing as Ed, and there are few people in the industry who have been doing revenue marketing as long as Ed has. And Ed's joining the show today, and we're going to have a conversation around what he has done to be successful, what he has done to hit his numbers, and he's just going to share lots of great ideas with you guys. So, Ed, welcome to the show.
Hi, Debbie. It's great to be here.
Well, it's just fantastic to have you. And you were on the show last year, and I really appreciate that. And I know that even in the last year, you guys have grown just an incredible amount when it comes to revenue marketing. But why don't we start? Why don't you just tell everybody who BrainShark is and what it is that you guys do?
Okay. Well, BrainShark is an on-demand platform for delivering rich media communications. In our world, basically, you have two worlds, two ways to communicate. There's live, like we're doing now, and then there's on-demand, which might be the podcast or whatever follows on this event. We specialize in the on-demand. Our targets are generally small, medium, and large enterprises, so we have a lot of audiences that we have to reach, and it's a B2B sale. The sales cycle can take, 60 to 90 days, typically. And it's my job to generate qualified leads for our sales team.
So let me ask you a question that I didn't prep you for, but I just think it's really relevant. You know, a lot of times when I'm talking to a marketing organization and they're about to begin this path to create leads, to really become true revenue marketers, and of course all of that's powered by marketing automation, sometimes they'll tell me, but Debbie, we just don't have enough content. And we know that content is king when it comes to revenue marketing. So tell us just a little bit about how BrainShark, a solution like BrainShark, can help revenue marketers address the challenge they have with creating content.
Yeah, content is obviously the challenge, especially if you deploy a marketing automation platform, you quickly realize you need to populate it with an awful lot of messages. What we allow the average business person to be able to do is to create their own content using the documents and materials that they have now. You know, a lot of the campaigns that we run, we don't necessarily have to have the highly produced, really expensive flash or video. It's really about getting out that message. You know, and I think as social media has grown, the ability to have a dialogue with less formal content is much more accepted by our audiences, and we have a platform that allows more people to contribute to that stream.
And I've seen, because we also use BrainShark at the Pettawoods Group, and we use it as part of our lead generation process. We use BrainShark solutions as part of our selling process, and it really is incredibly effective. And I think what you just said, in the world of the revenue marketer, having highly overproduced content is really not what it's all about. What it's about is creating a digital interaction that creates value for that prospect or for that customer in the digital world. So if it's a 2-minute snippet of something, if it's a half a paragraph of something, or if it's a 5-page document, right, you just have to think about in that digital communication what kind of content is going to help you create the most value. And again, BrainShark, a lot of people use BrainShark. Again, we use BrainShark, and it's just a great way to have another way to take a look at content. So, Ed, one of the things I told you when you came on the show, and every revenue marketer that I talk to on the show, one of the very first questions I'm going to ask everybody is, okay, if you're a revenue marketer, you want to share with me what kind of revenue marketing metrics you've been able to establish? Because at the end of the day, it's all about the numbers for the revenue marketer. So tell us, Ed, what are some of the key metrics that you've been able to achieve over there at BrainShark?
Well, we really started looking at this a couple of years ago as a closed loop, right? You know, most people have the sort of serious decision, sort of waterfall math kind of approach. And we use a similar one. We've adapted it a little bit over time. Last year, as far as, you know, new business pipeline, my team sourced 62% of the new business pipeline, and that's a complex B2B sale. So of the activities and the leads that we generated, that contributed, you know, to 62% of the pipeline. This year, so far, we're on a pace at, we're at 75%. Our goal is 80. I don't know if I've ever met anybody that hit 80, but we're trying.
That's amazing. You know, and a lot of analysts in the business, I think include Sirius, are saying, you know, 25 to 30% is actually a pretty good number. So to be hitting over the last 12 months 62% and to be looking for 75%, that's just, that's absolutely amazing. And if we have any listeners on the line, and if you'd like to call in and tell us what kind of revenue contribution you have in the pipeline, I'm sure some of our other listeners would just love to hear that number. And I've got to tell you a funny story about this. I was actually working with a client here in Atlanta, Equifax, and I was sharing with them the story of LexisNexis. And I was saying how marketing contributes 50% of the sales pipeline and how they really wanted to make that number even larger. And I think Equifax was probably around 25 or 30% at that time. And they thought they were so proud of that number. And so again, to hear someone who's actually at that level, that's pretty amazing. So somewhere between 62 to 75% contribution to new business pipeline, which is the hardest kind of business to get. What other kind of metrics do you have, Ed?
Well, in order to drive that, we use an inside sales team that's parallel to my demand gen team. And in order to get that, we have to give them, you know, a certain number of activities. So we take all of the activities that we might drive, including campaign responses, which in our case are BrainShark views, people that come to the website, people that participate in events, people that, you know, come by and visit the trade show booths and tell us to give them a call, that sort of thing. We combine all that and roll that up into a number we call total marketing activities. Now, while that's not really an indicator of quality necessarily, and it's not necessarily an indicator of how many leads we should expect, there are some trends you can look at. And if we're delivering a fair amount of activities, then we can look at other pieces of the process and see, you know, where the follow-up is happening and how that's being done and see if we can optimize in some other ways. But if we can generate a consistent volume and a large volume of activities, then that can only help. So that's the other indicator we look at.
Okay. So you've got new business contribution to pipeline. You've got total marketing activity. Again, not so much for the quality, but you know you've got to have a certain level of activity. And then you can track those trends to get opportunities into the pipeline.
Yep.
Any other key metrics that you guys live and die by?
Well, one of the things we look at is the quality of the database. We've got a database of in excess of 800,000 records now. We've probably almost doubled that since the beginning of the year. The targets for us are line of business managers for the most part, and those people – are probably going to be director level and above because they've got a little bit of either influence or they have some budget themselves. So when we look at our database and we try to get a good quality, how good is this data, things like bounces and completeness and all that thing, all that matters. But the level of title, we have, you know, two-thirds of it is director level and above. So we work really hard to build that database in a high-quality way. So
you
then
know,
those activities, they're among higher qualified people.
And, you know, when you talk about the quality of the database, certainly it's not sexy. It's not exciting. And I think a lot of marketers kind of tend to gloss that over. But I know for a fact that since you started revenue marketing and since you started using marketing automation, quality of the database was something that you really worked hard at. Can you tell us some tips and tricks that you have used that have really helped you clean up that database and tell us how long it took?
Well, when we first started, we had a database of just under 100,000 records. And we thought at the time, wow, we've got a big database of prospects. And when we were initially rolling out a marketing automation platform, the first one we utilized was Silverpop B2B. When we rolled that out, we took a good hard look at the completeness of that data because we knew we'd be porting it over, and we knew we needed to execute actions based on a variety of fields in there. One of the things we use is revenue. One of the things we use is also, you know, sort of company size in revenue, but we create some buckets around that, you know, put some ranges into place. The making sure that obviously emails, things like that are complete, filled out, company names, industries. Industries is kind of tough because you can't, you could use all the SIC codes and things like that, or, you know, DUNS numbering processes and those sorts of things. What we wanted to do was sort of create some more general buckets that we could go after easier. So while, you know, a financial services company might have a bunch of different SIC codes, we can just lump them into, oh, they're a financial services company. We gave them sort of broad industries. But doing that ahead of time helps you when you're rolling it out, not only in making sure you import clean data, but making sure that you're thinking about how you're going to reach those prospects before you even deploy that system. And you've really got to have those dialogues at the high level.
So did you guys use a tool to clean up your data? Was it manual, append? How did you guys do that?
We did a few things. One was I hired a database assistant. I would recommend that to anybody, honestly. The value that you get out of that is just incredible because it's an ongoing thing. You can clean it up once, but as soon as you go a few months down the road, we know how much attrition happens out there. We know how much, you know, new lists we're bringing in. We need to make sure that those are homogenized so that when we bring it in, it's good and clean. If anybody works with Jigsaw will actually run a little compare against your data and tell you how complete it is because, you know, obviously they want to sell you some data. They came in and they ran a compare for us, and they typically get somewhere, you know, 20 or 30% complete rate, something like that is typical what they'll see in a database. And they ran it against ours, and they came up with, you know, something in the neighborhood of 80%. And they were kind of blown away that they'd never really seen anybody that had data that was that clean. So investing in the personnel is just going to make your programs that much more effective. Because you know how to go after that person.
I completely agree with that. I bought my first marketing automation system probably 7-8 years ago now. And I had one individual, and my entire team actually was paid variable compensation based on some goals that we had in place for marketing, but also based on revenue that we helped contribute. Mm-hmm. But I actually, her variable comp was actually tied to the quality and the size of the database. And having that person really focused on the quality of that database was everything as part of the success to our campaign. So I think that's a good strategy because you're right, it's an ongoing type of thing. And while everyone would love to have this magic wand that they could just wave around and blam, my data's clean, it's absolutely positively not going to happen that way. So Tell us a little bit about your journey, Ed, around marketing automation. I know you've been doing this for, what, about 4 years? So tell us about your journey, how it started, and tell us kind of like that, what that journey was like and where you are today.
Okay. Well, we started about 4 years ago, as Debbie said, and I guess that's when that was sort of my time frame of becoming a revenue marketer before Debbie made it cool.
And you're so funny.
And then so what we were looking at it, and we said, well, we really are running a lot of very, very small, very targeted emails, and they were largely sales-driven. So sales would identify, in conjunction with their leadership, they would identify some target companies, they would identify a message, and then they would do some work on that, and they would flip it over to us, and then we would guide them as to, you know, some best practices and steer them in some, you know, better directions, and then we would launch those campaigns. But we were doing something in the neighborhood of 80 of them a week, and they were small. They were a few hundred names each. So if we were going to scale and grow the company, we really had to do things a lot differently. We had to be able to reach wider audiences. We had to give sales some control, and we had to drive all that from within. We couldn't go after just, you know, hey, let's go after this one, and then let's go after that one. Because what happens in that environment is the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? And that's not necessarily the best strategic bet. So we deployed SilverPop Engage B2B, and that was a good platform. We did an awful lot with it. We were able to automate a lot of those processes. We were able to do more marketing on behalf of more reps more quickly. So we were no longer dependent upon those small sort of one-off emails that were so labor-intensive. We could focus instead on an entire industry or category or revenue range. What that provided us was, you know, a great deal of marketing firepower without having to add a lot of people, right? The existing people were running that platform.
So when you guys bought your first marketing automation system, which was SilverPop, was there anything that surprised you after you got it in-house and you got it up and running on the nice side? I mean, were you able to do things that you kind of didn't envision? I mean, kind of what was that like?
What happens is you roll out that platform, and what you have in mind is something, it may be relatively simple. It may be a more automated way of what you're doing today, which was sort of some of our intentions. We wanted to consolidate our view of the data, and we wanted to consolidate how forms were brought into the system and try to prevent duplicates from coming into the system and that sort of thing. What happens very quickly is you realize, oh, wow, this could impact this other area of our business. And for us, it happened within a year. We started to realize, wow, we've got this whole other set of customer communications that we really need to be able to deliver. How are we going to do that? What custom type fields are we going to need? What sort of programs are we going to need? What sort of additional fields are we going to need to sync and things like that? And then as we sort of peeled those layers off, we realized we needed to go to a different platform that had a little more of that flexibility at the data level.
Let me speak to that point. And this happens in 90% of the cases that we work with clients. So what happens is, and Ed said it exactly, what you have in mind, what you think you're going to do with marketing automation, you're really kind of thinking, what are my current processes, and I'm going to speed them up, or I'm going to get them more efficient. But when you actually get marketing automation in and you start using it, it really becomes a completely different model. What you thought you could do and what you can actually do is quite often far apart, and that learning curve is extremely steep. And again, it happens once you begin to experience. And I like to tell people the story that when I first bought marketing automation, I thought I would know everything and I'd be so great at it. And what I didn't know was absolutely stunning, to say the least. And so this happens to a lot of marketers, which is why we try to help marketers understand that really thinking through the business and how this impacts the business as early as possible is the way that you can really maximize that technology. And then the second point you had, Ed, another excellent point, when you guys were using this for standard, typical lead generation, you know, how can we produce more and more high-quality leads that we can pass on to sales so that we can get some top-line revenue growth going? But what you really did at the next phase was begin to think about how can we automate interactions and communications with our customers. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, what we had in mind was, well, I'll just say, you know, from BrainShark's point of view, when somebody gets a BrainShark account, if they work at a large company, the administrator may say, oh, you should have a BrainShark account. And they say, okay, yeah, great, I'd love one. But we know that when an author actually goes into BrainShark, creates their first presentation, sees how easy it is to do, gets a little bit comfortable with the sound of their own voice and putting their own slides together and things like that, or using standard materials and adding their own voice front and back or something like that, there's a comfort level, right? So when somebody does it for the first time, they're more likely to do it again. So what we decided to do was provide a way for companies to provide their authors with a way to receive a series of emails as they get their account to kind of give them that guidance. How do I get started? What do I do? And so we put together a series of emails that they opt into a preference center we created, which we in turn synced with Salesforce, which we in turn synced with Eloqua. And those communications are fired out of that. So our application talks to Salesforce and in turn Eloqua to deliver a few things to those people so that they can understand how to get started and what they should do next. And there's some things for them to send us so that we can send them back something that they might like, you know, a decal or, you know, give them a cookie for doing something relatively simple. We give them a sample presentation to upload and things like that. What we found was they were, I think, four times more likely to create a presentation when we did that. So, you know, we're seeing an uptick in authorship. We're seeing an uptick in usage. We're seeing, you know, all those positive drivers happening, and this is one component of it. You know, we made a big commitment to customer service and customer outreach and that sort of thing. But to have those sort of tactical get started, you know.
Yeah, I just love that story every time you tell it because, again, you know, if you're thinking about being a revenue marketer, it's not just around going out and getting net new business. It also can be encouraging current customers to use more effectively the systems that they have bought from you. And again, this is a great story. We did something very similar at Intercall, the big teleconferencing company. So when someone signs up for their conferencing account, Eloqua sits there and looks at if they're using it or if they're not. And there's a whole series of automated communications that happen with the client based on their use or their non-use, exactly the kind of thing that you guys have put together at BrainShark. And we're seeing this, what I call operational use of marketing operations, of marketing automation systems. And again, from a revenue marketer perspective, right, it's using the same tool, but you're really finding new ways to create revenue for the company. And to me, that's the most fundamental definition of the revenue marketer. So, and for those listening, Ed went from Silverpop to Eloqua, what, about a year ago?
Yeah, almost exactly a year ago. I think we signed the contract in September, and we were deployed in October. It only took a week. We used the Pedowitz Group to come on site for a week.
Yay, we like that.
and you guys came on site, and you were great. Walked us through a few things prior, you know, did some data mapping exercises and things like that ahead of time, and came on site for a week, and we were effectively switched over. And I was blown away by that. Initially when we rolled out, we went on our own, thinking, well, we can probably handle it. It doesn't seem that complicated, and it took us a while. So bringing on a consultant was not only helpful from just the point of view of speed, how fast you could get deployed, but also in the additional consulting, it's well worth it.
And we find that people are at different stages. I mean, clearly, someone like BrainShark They were migrating from one marketing automation platform to another. So they were a very sophisticated consumer who knew exactly what they wanted. And if you take a look at all the marketing automation implementations, which again, marketing, you can't be a revenue marketer without marketing automation. You just can't. It's not going to happen. So having that as the core system integrated with your CRM to power the whole revenue marketing practice is absolutely required. But again, people are at different phases of what their needs are. Some people, they select a system, they implement, and they just go along their merry way. Others need a little bit more help. So everyone's going to be in a little bit different place. But the other part of your story, Ed, that I'm really interested in, so you've been at this for about 4 years, right?
Yeah.
So you've grown your database from 100,000 to 800,000 contacts.
Yep.
You have taken a focus that was just on lead generation, and now it's higher quality leads and also operational excellence, which also pulls in more top-line revenue.
Yep.
But in addition to that, you also have a different structure for your revenue marketing practice than what you had 4 years ago. And I find people are very interested in how did you structure a team around this. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what your structure is like?
Okay. Well, about 4 years ago, we started experimenting with the idea that we should have somebody on, you know, what we were calling inside sales or telequalification. And we tried that, and we realized, you know, this is probably a pretty productive way to spend time and to make the sales reps more productive. We can do some frontline qualification. So our goal there was, you know, when our lead qualification people speak to somebody, you know, somebody that's responded to a campaign, they've said contact me, we do put a human filter on there and we say, well, let's have a conversation. Let's see if we can identify a business need. Let's see if we can discern where you are in the organization and what your authority is, and maybe you'll bring somebody else to the conversation, because ultimately sales needs to get higher and higher within an organization regardless of where you start, right? So since then, we've grown that team to about 12 people. The structure of that, our sales has grown also. I think at the time when we started it, we probably only had a dozen salespeople. Now we've got about 50.
Wow. Okay.
So, and we've got a variety of teams, right? We've got a mid-markets team that focuses on a certain revenue threshold. We've got enterprise sales teams. We've got teams that specialize in channels. And we've got some very small, sort of almost SOHO sales teams. So to feed that variety the types of activity across the board is really hard to do without something like marketing automation, because it's just not scalable otherwise, right? You'd need so many bodies to be able to do it, to drive things across all those revenue thresholds, that it would just be, or you'd be doing something very generic and it may not be effective.
So Ed, part of your charter is to actually envision and create campaigns that are going to produce marketing qualified leads for mid-market, for enterprise, for channels, and also for SOHO, correct?
Yep.
And do you guys call it a marketing qualified lead when it passes to the lead qual team?
When the lead qualification team gets it, it's really still just a lead in the database. A name that's
okay.
Had some recent activity, a name that looks good, somebody that's responded recently or raised their hand and said, hey, have somebody call me.
So
even
let's
the ones
the,
that,
yeah, let's take the hand raisers out. So do you have a lead score that's applied to this activity?
We do. It's just tough for us to get to a point where it's very targeted. See,
mm-hmm.
Our product spans the enterprise. So somebody, a director of human resources and a VP of marketing, could both potentially be high-quality targets for us.
Okay.
So to put a lead score into place, we've been working on trying to get a model that's more effective for us. What we're able to do is sort of raise the visibility of some things that are hot, right? People that look decent and have had some recent activity. Trying to get more refined on that is sort of our goal right now. How can we really identify some of these, you know, tight pockets of activity for us? But we've got such a broad application, it's a real challenge.
I can absolutely understand. So there's a lead with some associated value and some associated score, and that goes over to the lead qualification team, and it goes over in real time, correct?
Yeah, they have real-time visibility to activities that are happening, right? We're using Eloqua to push information real-time into Salesforce where they work. We're getting BrainShark information, which tells them how much, you know, for people that aren't familiar with it, what it does is it gives, when somebody clicks on an email campaign and it's got a BrainShark in it, what that's doing is BrainShark is, they're playing, they're receiving a multimedia message, voice and visuals, interactions, things like that. But BrainShark is measuring that activity, so we can push back into the lead qualifier or the sales rep's view how much of that content was actually consumed, so they can choose the ones that were more engaged. So, for instance,
if I have a 25 PowerPoint slides, and if somebody only visits the first two, they're not that interested. But if they go through all 25, clearly I'm showing a higher level of interest.
Yeah, that's the idea. It'll also give you an indication of if your content is resonating.
Absolutely.
Right? If virtually nobody's getting to the third slide or whatever it might be, you got to look at your content and say, how am I disinteresting them on slide two?
Right? Absolutely. And so it's real time. And again, this is one of the great things, because there is this huge chasm between marketing and sales when it comes to the lead leaving marketing and going over to sales. And if you didn't do anything but solve that one issue and help sales prioritize the value of what they're following up on, you will have a home run, I promise you. So
absolutely.
This goes over to the lead qualification team, and you have about 12 people on the lead qual team right now?
Yep.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ed. Oh, well, so they'll look at all that activity, and like I said, they'll make some judgments against the quality of that activity. So, for instance, if they get a campaign view let's say they get two. They're both VPs of marketing at Fortune 100 companies. Granted, they should call them both, but the one that participated more and engaged more with the content should get the call first, because they're the
absolutely
more interested. They'll be easier to get on the phone, and they'll have a warmer conversation. And then when they have that conversation, they try to get to how can we help them? Do they have a problem that we can help them solve? And, you know, are they of the right level, and are they really worth a salesperson spending their time to set up a call? And we schedule a meeting, and we hand that over. Now, in the past, we used to call that an MQL, a marketing qualified lead. Now, we sort of stepped on the serious decisions model a little bit, and we went straight to marketing qualified opportunity.
Ah, okay.
So our deliverable is actually a $0 opportunity to the sales rep.
Gotcha. So I want to clarify something. The lead qualification team reports to who?
Marketing, VP of marketing. So they're parallel
now
to me.
So has the lead qual team reported into marketing since its inception 4 years ago?
Yes. Yeah, okay. We made a decision at the onset. Some people have it reporting into sales. Some have it in marketing. You could make an argument either way, and it probably depends on your own process. For us, it works pretty well having it report into marketing.
I see this as being a very successful part of revenue marketing practices, having that additional lead qualification take place by people and having that group report into marketing. Quite often when I see a lead qual group that has that was reporting into sales, they tend to get pulled into other things, right, including perhaps even carrying some quota. So I see that their focus is, a lot of times, if it's in sales, it is not the same type of focus, because they just get pulled a lot of different kinds of ways. So I see this, when you think about building out a revenue marketing practice, and we are actually, and we just did a webinar called Keys to Building a Revenue Marketing Practice, and this is one of those keys. Again, depending upon what kind of company you have, depending upon the size, depending on what kind of solution that you're selling, but I'm finding these lead qualification teams more and more in organizations that I go in and take a look at. And how are the lead, how is the lead qual team, what does their variable comp look like? I mean, how are they comped?
In a couple of ways, right? I mean, you know, they get a base salary because they're there working each day. But they also get they also get comped on the lead that they're creating. So they get some dollar amount for each lead that they, or each opportunity that they create. But there's also an overlay of compensation on whether those opportunities that they hand over get dollarized. So there's a quality level.
Okay.
Right. So that's our way of trying to get to a higher quality. If they could hand over things all day long of low quality and make okay money, but if they hand over things, if they're more selective, if they say, you know what, this person, yeah, they could be qualified, but I'm gonna hang on to them and work them for a little while longer before I hand it over because I want it to get dollarized.
Okay, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And again, the other big trend that we're seeing, when it comes to revenue marketing, when it comes to building a revenue marketing practice, when it comes to being a revenue marketer, we're seeing more and more variable compensation tied to things beyond the number of leads that get created, to the impact on pipeline and the impact on pure revenue dollars for the organization as well. So do you guys, outside of the lead qual team, does your marketing group have a variable comp that's tied to any aspects of revenue performance?
To an extent, yes. Typically, it's based on our deliverable to sales, which is based on a number of qualified opportunities. But that number of qualified opportunities is sort of, again, reverse engineered out of the sort of serious decisions math. So, you know, we need X amount of deals at X amount of ASP. Therefore, we need X amount of leads, and we're going to close, you know, some ratio of them. And it's all reverse engineered out of that. So it while it's not necessarily tied to, you know, fiscal performance, it is tied to the math that's going to generate that fiscal performance, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, and I always tell marketers, be careful what you wish for because you might get it. And this is absolutely is that not true, Ed?
Oh, sure, yeah. But incentive drives behavior. So.
It does. Absolutely. I remember, again, I go back to when I bought my first marketing automation system, and I tied part of my team's variable comp to two things, the number of opportunities that got created in Salesforce, and number two, whether or not the sales team hit their number every quarter. Now, we're in Atlanta, and you could hear them screaming all the way to Seattle. But it changed behavior, and that was the key thing right there. It absolutely, positively changed behavior. So I thought that was excellent. So if you think about you have a lead qual team, tell me a little bit about the rest of the structure. How do you guys, day in and day out, run demand generation? How do you run revenue marketing? What are the other key players on your team that allows you to make the impact that you're making in your organization?
Okay. Well, in my case, my team is also sort of a technology center. In fact, I kind of make the joke that, you know, marketing is the new IT. We have... you know, we've got the marketing automation platform that's controlled by my team. The CRM system, we've got the Rockstar CRM administrator. We have the database and database manager. I have events and an events management platform. I have, a few assistants, and I have the creative services. So most of the systems are all under our control, and what that brings is a unique challenge in trying to find marketers who are tech-savvy or creating marketers from tech-savvy people. The, you know, what I've seen over the past, you know, and I'm no spring chicken, what I've seen over the past 5 years or so is just that what marketing used to be was, you know, the place you went when you wanted the ad for the trade show, or you wanted the signage, or you wanted a logo that was going to go in this publication, or, you know, you wanted that sort of thing, the brand sort of stuff. The way it's evolved and you know, the birth of, you know, the revenue marketer, as it were, is really a fundamental change in talent on the team. You're going to have to find really smart, really tech-savvy people that have skills that aren't necessarily something that they're going to learn in school. Right?
That's absolutely true.
Now, they don't teach Eloqua in college. Right?
Yep, there's no undergraduate program. I have not found a graduate program yet that teaches anything about demand generation marketing or revenue marketing at all.
Yeah, you'll find fine writers, you know,
yeah.
But it's a different skill set and it's a different way of thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are these besides the and I call them a marketing technologist, which you can actually Google the term marketing technologist. It's just it's a phrase that is becoming more and more popular. And kind of along with the idea of the marketing technologist is also the role of marketing operations. It's mm-hmm. kind of like when the sales world really began to adopt CRM. And then you had a CRM administrator, and then all of a sudden there was sales ops that went on. The same type of trend is happening in marketing right now, and there's actually an organization on the West Coast called MOCCA, M-O-C-C-A. It's a very young organization, and it is for marketing operations professionals. So this is also a very, very strong trend that we're seeing, and it's a key part of any revenue marketing practice. So you've got your marketing technologist, and I love that phrase, marketing is the new IT. And who else do you have?
IT doesn't like it, though.
I'm sure they don't.
So parallel to me, again, we have a so there's three groups in marketing, right? There's sort of the demand gen or lead gen team, and then there's the telequalification or business development group, and then there's a content group. So we actually have three people on staff charged with, you know, creating messaging, creating content, creating emails and presentations and, you know, papers and, you know, all that sort of stuff that we need to keep feeding the programs. So there's really three sort of functional groups, and that grew, the content group really grew out of that need to have more content more quickly for more audiences.
The need to feed.
That's what the content
group is. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So now the demand gen group is the group that uses your marketing automation system, Eloqua, launches and loads the campaigns, is responsible for the performance of the campaigns.
Yep.
Go ahead.
The database, the data integrity, the growth of the database,
okay.
The processes, creating visibility for those people downstream that need to follow up and act on that data. You know, we really look at where in sales we need to provide a little extra emphasis so that, you know, if we have a team that's struggling or has a higher goal that they have to go get, for whatever business reason, then we need to augment that. And we'll also work with services and other groups to deploy, you know, customer messaging and things like that.
Okay. And what about the business development group? Is that the group that has the lead qual team?
Yeah, that's the lead qual team. We call them business development representatives.
Okay. All right.
Or account development representatives.
So how large is your overall team?
Marketing as a whole, I believe, is
between the demand gen, the
19?
Business development, and the content.
I think is it 19 people now, I think?
19 people. Okay. And what I find fascinating about this is if you take a look at it, this is a group that has grown because they're contributing to revenue. And it's like when you say, oh, yeah, our sales went from 12 to 50, right? And a lot of times in a company that's growing, they'll spend more money on marketing, but they'll spend money in all different kinds of areas. But this group has grown as they have proven that they're able to contribute to revenue. So when either a company is expanding or when a company is not expanding, is actually going the other way, this type of marketing group, this group that has a revenue marketing practice, has the same kind of conversation with the CEO that the VP of sales has. If we're growing, we need to put more feet on the street because we know the feet on the street can impact top-line revenue. Same conversation in a revenue marketing practice. And if you're not growing, a lot of times it's much cheaper to let feet on the street go and then to actually have that slack be picked up through the revenue marketing team. And we see that happening every single day.
Yeah, it's absolutely more effective and more cost-effective to have marketing owning that dialogue, owning that communication responsibility, and bringing that prospect further through the sales cycle than charging the reps with it, because we can do it in a more scalable way, right? It's not a one-to-one type of ratio.
And this is the type of thing, when we see very successful revenue marketing practices, it's because they can contribute to top-line revenue growth in a way that's extraordinarily cost-effective. And also, a lot of times, find a new way to impact revenue. And again, a great example is the case that Ed mentioned to you guys, where they use Eloqua to have those operational, ongoing communications with their customers to help them to get to use the solutions, which keeps them sticky and keeps them as users and keeps them for a very, very long time as a customer. So, you know, this whole notion of revenue marketing, it's not just about another check in the box for marketing. It is actually, in the most successful companies, a little business division of its own that clearly is intimately integrated with traditional marketing and also intimately integrated with sales. So, Ed, we have about 13 minutes left, and again, if anyone would like to call in and ask questions, I think the call-in number is 646-478-5604. So if you have any questions about Ed and what he has done to become the extraordinary revenue marketer that he is, just please feel free to call in. But in the meantime, I'm going to keep asking Ed questions because, again, he's just a treasure trove of information. One of the things that people ask me a lot is, how do you get on the same page as sales? You know, a lot of times there is, in companies, there's a track record of, you know, marketing, creating leads, them not being accepted by sales, not being followed up on sales because they're not viewed as valuable. And quite often that chasm between marketing and sales is pretty wide, quite frankly. So then you come in and you say, hey, we're now going to be a revenue marketing practice, and we're powered by this thing called marketing automation. So tell me what that transition was like for you guys. How did marketing and sales get on the same page?
Well, for our organization, and actually for most, I'll say that has to happen top-down. You know, we've got strong leadership at the top of marketing and sales, and in fact, the leadership is a common point, right? Our EVP of marketing and sales is the go-to guy, right? So all of sales reports up and all of marketing reports up. So there is really no one to point fingers at each other because he's the common source, right? He manages the disputes if there are any. So what that does is it creates some more of that alignment, right? I don't know as we get to be a very large company if that'll be a scalable thing that we'll be able to do, but the benefit it brings is that, you know, he'll weigh where he wants that resource applied, right? So for instance, we make the case that, oh, we need to do X, Y, and Z, and we need this investment. He may say, no, that sales job, they should go do that. Okay, fine. Or he'll say, well, our sales guys are wasting time doing this. Marketing needs to pick that up. And we'll say, okay, fine. That's the way it's going to be. That's the way we run it. The other thing is just sort of, you know, there's really no substitute for communicating with the sales managers and having regular meetings with them. They, you know, they'll tell you their day-to-day pains. That sometimes, and I've been at companies like this where, You know, you go to a meeting, and it'll be the sales and marketing meeting, and you walk in there with a target on your back, and you walk out feeling like you got a laundry list of to-do items, and you've been shot at all day, right? I mean,
we've all been to those meetings. Oh, yeah.
But what, you know, that's not productive, right? It's you know, you're asking sales for a list of to-dos rather than saying, what are you struggling with, and let me see if I can develop a solution for you. And let me determine what that deliverable might be or that program might be. So we try to have regular meetings, and we try to have regular meetings across the different functional areas because I have sales teams that are focused on the customer base. Their needs are greatly different from those that are focused on, you know, new business for mid-markets. Right? So,
you know, Ed, you and I need to write a little white paper together, and we need to make it something kind of fun. Because, again, you know, marketers ask me all the time, how do I get aligned with sales? How does that happen? And so I've often thought, you know, you're aligned with sales if, right? And so instead of telling them, yeah, you got to do all this stuff, maybe what we should do and what would be very beneficial for a lot of people is let's craft, 10 to 15 statements that tell you that you're aligned with sales. And I bet if we did that, there'd be a lot of aha's for a lot of marketing. Because, again, as a marketer, if you've never been involved in sales or sales operations, or if you've never spent much time, if you're really coming from a true traditional marketing background, and this is kind of newer stuff for you, I think that could absolutely be eye-opening. And I know people ask me that question all the time. How do you guys work so well with sales?
Yeah, and the basic fundamental premise of the relationship is understanding, you know, we're going to deliver this, and you're going to do this with it, right?
Yep.
And that eliminates a lot of finger-pointing. So
yep.
We say we're going to deliver X amount of leads. Okay, what's the definition of that? Define what that is. Define what it means. Make sure everybody agrees on it, and make sure everybody agrees that as we go forward, we're okay with changing what that is. We just need a stake in the ground for now as our best guess. And really, really getting to a point where if there's a change that needs to be made regarding what the quantity or quality or you know, what the makeup of that handoff is and how it's dispositioned, both people are at the table, right? We expect a certain amount of follow-up on the leads that we do create for them.
Absolutely.
We expect a follow-up. There's a mutual agreement. It's not just a one-way street.
Absolutely. Got to have those service level agreements in place. So I have a comment, and then I have a final question for you. And my comment is something that you said about common definitions. Well, how easy does that sound, right? Of course, you ask marketing, and they'll say, yes, we have a common set of definitions. I was just doing an analysis with a client, and it was very interesting to see how they had this particular definition of a lead. And I asked three different people, and I got three different answers.
Exactly.
And none of them were absolutely correct. And I bet if I had asked sales, I would have gotten even a more different answer. But one of the things that we find is that without a marketing automation system to actually quantify based on demographic data and online behavior, it's really hard to come up with a great definition or to come up with a set of lead nomenclature. And so the whole idea behind our marketing automation systems for the first time, it gives marketing and sales a way to quantify the value of a lead. And so one of the very first things that we always do once a client begins with marketing automation is get those lead definitions because, again, you can quantify it. There's no fuzzy logic that's applied to this kind of lead. So that's my comment. But my last question, we only have a few minutes left, is this. Ed, I mean, clearly, my gosh, you've been there, you've done it. There are so few people in our industry who can say that. I mean, if you take a look at how many people have revenue marketing practices, and that's only going to be a subset of the 7% of the market that is saturated with marketing automation systems. Of course, that number is much higher in the technology sector. But, you know, if you think about overall 7% saturation, and if you think about of that 7%, how many marketers are really making a revenue impact? I mean, they have all the tools at their disposal to do that, but it takes a combination of people, process, and technology to really pull this off, and it absolutely takes that executive leadership. If you were giving advice to a marketer who is just beginning this journey, Ed, what would you tell them?
would say, call me. You know, come work for Brainshark. The
let me tell you what you don't know.
No, it's not about that. It's the biggest thing is know your data. That's going to tell you everything, and that's all that's what's going to trigger every event and instance that happens from your marketing automation platform. And the other thing is really do some forensics on the types of business you have done in the past, right? Things that you've qualified, things that have closed, and the subset of those that have qualified that have closed, and really dig into the reasons why they were won or lost, and see if you can find some common set of those, some common ground there. Because if you can find some common ground in your history, then that gives you the ability to go to your management and say, you know, we've found this as a trend that happened in the past. I'd like to build a program that addresses this and tries to get more of this as a place to start, to be very specific. That way you can impact something finite, something predictable, something measurable, and then you'll win additional buy-in. My system is big and complex, and I've got a big database. I've got it closely tied to Salesforce.com, and I've got our application integrated and other applications integrated. If you think about it in those terms, it might become overwhelming. I would start small. I would start with one business goal, and I would lay the foundation as to how to do that. The rest is going to, you know, your eyes will open. And you'll really start to discover what you're capable of and what's possible.
I think that's great advice. And I always tell, especially larger organizations who are trying to bring this in, because smaller organizations, it's flat, there's less people to involve. But in a larger organization, I always tell people, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And the same thing is true when you're building a revenue marketing practice. Well, Ed, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Debbie. I will tell
you guys, I interviewed Ed last year, and the very first thing, his very first piece of advice last year, too, was know your advice. So he means know your data. So he means you need to know your data. So next week's guest is going to be Frank Donnie. He is the SVP of Sales and Marketing for Richardson, which is actually a sales training company. And Frank has a rich background in using marketing automation and in building revenue marketing practices. So I hope everyone can join us. In the meantime, please check out Brainshark, www.brainshark.com. They have incredible solutions. I really love them for marketing, and I also love them to help in the sales process. I hope everyone has a great week. Enjoy the weekend, and again, join us next Thursday at 2:00 Eastern Standard Time. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.